cold is a prerequisite for ice fishing. If it's not cold enough, there's no ice. Yeah, it has to be cold.
People, I should use that as our opening line.
That would be good.
Cold is a prerequisite.
Time for the Angler Within podcast with Roy Bilby.
Going to do some ice fishing tips and pointers, and hopefully it'll come in handy when you get out there on the ice at the end of next week with us. So again, my son's coming out for a four to five day ice fishing extravaganza.
Love it.
We're looking forward to that. He's fired up. I'm fired up. The last few trips we were going to do got canceled due to inclement weather. We were headed out tomorrow, finally, because I went out Monday, and it was brutal. They were calling for southwest winds 10 to 20 miles an hour with gusts to 30. And the lake I wanted to fish, I've been waiting all winter to get on, runs north and south. So I thought that's going to get hammered by that wind. And I'd already canceled one trip there because of the exact same scenario. And we didn't get the wind that they called for. So I went Monday, irregardless of the forecast, for two reasons. The first time I had bypassed on that trip because of the forecast, and I'm checking it on my phone and wind direction and velocity and all that stuff too for that area, it just never materialized. But also, this lake lays down in a low spot. So I thought, well, most of the wind would probably go overhead. So I went out there Monday, and that is entirely not the case. It's down in a low spot, but it's also along a long flat. So the wind drops in there and just picks up speed. I was the only one on the lake, and that's probably why. I had the whole playing field to myself, but my goodness, the wind was horrendous. I did set tip-ups that I build wind dams. When we have a day like that, I take the direction that the wind is coming from, and when I first drill my hole, I scoop everything up with my boots, and I make a barricade on the windward side so that all the snow being blown across the ice gets parted and goes around the hole. Because if you don't, it gets slushed in like 30 seconds with the snow blowing across the ice. And then you can't see down in the hole. It's all covered with slush. It freezes into a solid brick, which is what happened.
That tip right there, you just saved a lot of people a lot of aggravation.
Yeah. I've done that since I was a teenager, because it's aggravating when you've got snow blowing across the ice and that water in that hole is catching it, and it immediately turns to a slushy mess. I mean, 3/4 of an inch thick some days. And when that freezes, it's just, you get a flag on your tip up and you're running out there. Now you got to break ice and do all this stuff just to get your tip up out. It's frustrating.
And I know nothing about ice fishing at all. So like, I know what the stuff is. I know what the stuff is, and I understand how it works.
Yep.
Just no application.
Yeah,
but you just, that would have been me with not putting a barricade up and having to re-break that thing open every time.
And you would have been, this is fun?
Yeah.
You guys intentionally put yourself through this? So, yeah, that's just one of the little tricks I've always done to help when the wind kicks up and you've got those days. However, on Monday, that wind was so bad. I mean, I use like a camp seat to sit in when I jig, because it's just more comfortable. And every time I stood up, I mean, the wind blew the seat right over. And
you ever lost your seat across the lake?
I've gone running after things on a couple occasions. We've seen it all on the ice. We've seen guys' shanties that weren't anchored down start cartwheeling down the lake, and you've got one or two guys, I mean, running like they're running a relay. I mean, running full out after that thing, and the gap between them and the shanty is just getting wider and wider.
And plus the danger in that, going out further out from where you are, doesn't the ice get a little bit thinner as you go further out probably? You
think, once you're into the season, it's pretty uniform across most lakes.
Okay.
But that's not, and that's once the season is well established. I got a story for you where I got a little spooked last week when we tried to venture out onto a lake that had finally closed up. But let me finish the cartwheeling shanty.
Yes,
stuff.
Yes, continue.
We've seen that a couple times, and we're sitting there with all our stuff anchored down and watching those poor guys and the gap between them getting wider and wider as that thing is cartwheeling down the lake. And it's just one of those deals where you say, man, it is a good day to not be those two guys. And yeah, it's that the wind can be horrendous out on it, because I generally on most lakes there's nothing there to break the wind, unless you're on a lake that's more like a riverine environment and has been dammed up and impounded, where you've got channel swings and stuff like that, where it kind of snakes through, like the lake you're on, Goodyear, that kind of twist and bends it follows the creek channel. So there's generally a place on that lake where you can get out of the wind because of all the points and the way it swings through the landscape. On a lake like Otsego Lake or Saratoga Lake or Champlain, where it's just a wide open expanse, all the wind does is pick up velocity until it gets to you. And the only thing to break that wind is a shanty, if you've got one and you're anchored down, or the back of your ice fishing suit. So we ventured out on Otsego Lake last week, and we'd been watching it. The north end had been frozen for about a month, and the ice slowly works its way down the lake. We like to fish the south end, but they run a lot of bubblers on the public docks there and the private docks. So that keeps the ice from freezing on that end. That's just at the docks. So you can come in from either side, but mind you, that is the last ice to form. And you could see where we were in the village, and you could see ice going out about 150 feet. And then you could see a gap of hundreds and hundreds of yards of open water. And then you could see where the ice was coming down from the north end all the way down to that point. But that expanse of several hundred yards of water had not closed up and iced in yet. But it happened to finally close up when we had that. Oh, we had one morning. It was -8 degrees here at 6 a.m. with no breeze whatsoever. -8. And we said, it's going to close up. I happened to be in Cooperstown a couple days later, and I took pictures and sent them to my buddy, and I said, it's done. It was ice all the way across. So we went out a couple days later, and there was already a couple guys out there. And I don't know how they got to the place they got. The area we wanted to fish was beyond them. But as we're walking out, we got into that area where it had been several hundred yards of open water. And it was to say, I mean, we check when we go on, we had 5 inches of ice. But that center section where it had just froze had not had time to get that thick. I'm talking ice that was there a week before was now 5 inches thick. We started walking across that expanse several hundred yards, and all of a sudden I hear a crack and I feel the ice drop.
Yep.
Just a little bit, and I look down and that crack was right between my 2 feet.
But you're
and
the guy that doesn't care about that, Roy.
It's
don't move, and you're right. Scaring your friend half to death.
Yeah, that's once I had already been on the lake twice. I knew the ice was well established.
Yeah, okay.
And it was already 8 inches thick and just getting thicker and
so
thicker.
So how thick
thicker.
Was this ice that just cracked under you?
Because of what it did, I'm assuming it was about 2 inches. That is not safe.
No.
Because as soon as I felt it drop when I heard the crack, and I looked down between my feet where that crack went and was actually growing across, and water started to seep up through.
How deep was that water right there? You were on top.
About 8 foot.
Mm.
Way too deep. Yep. Way too deep. The because I'm cautious, I've only gone through the ice once. and it was up to my knees.
I'll tell you and, what, I don't like those odds.
No.
I just don't like those odds. It seems like, correct me if I'm wrong, there are people out there who drive cars who have either hit a deer or have not hit a deer yet.
Right.
Okay, those are the folks that, right, we live out here where there's deer hits every day, every day. So, yeah. So when you look at ice fishing, are you guaranteed to go through the ice in some way, shape, or form, basically?
No.
No?
No.
Yeah, I don't know, man. I'll go. How often do you not worry about, like, when you're out there fishing, are you just not thinking about the thickness of the ice and if you're safe or not the whole time? Or does it ever kind of, like, peek into your mind?
No. The first three trips of the year when we've been anxious to get out there, even if we see 30 people out there, we go out to where we know it's about knee-deep, and we drill a hole, and we measure it ourselves. Once the season is established, we're done with that. The mistake we made on Otsego was we knew the north end had been froze for a month. We knew there was open water down on the south end about 150 yards out from the shore. So the ice where we checked it had been frozen for over a week. Plus, we got into that below zero stretch for 3 days. So that's why that ice was now 5 inches thick. Again, they're still running bubblers, but that open water had only been froze for about 3-4 days, and it just had not gotten built up enough. We forgot about that, and we had been so anxious to get out there. We had a that was a poor miscalculation on our part. With all the experience, decades of experience we both had ice fishing, we should have known better. But in our excitement to get out on the spot we knew would produce fish, we saw the other people out there, but they must have come in from the side is the only thing we could figure. Yet there were tracks walking out there, but I don't know. Once I saw water immediately start to seep up through, I said, nope, because my buddy heard it crack and he stopped. He was behind me and I just started backing up very slowly. And I said, nope, not worth it. Not doing this. And we backed off back to that 5 inches. And he said, why, what's going on? I said, that's the part that was open a week ago. Apparently it's not thick enough. And I said, I know those guys got out there at this point. I mean, my heart was pounding and in my throat. And I said, not worth it. Not worth it. We need to go to a different lake. And he suggested, well, let's go to the north end. We checked, we had 8 inches of ice up there. And there was about 60 people out there. And we were able to fish safely up there. No problem.
Interesting.
The one time I did break through was on a very shallow lake, and the ice.
Yeah, you're up to your knees.
I'm up to my knees. My feet were already on the bottom. My son was young, and he saw me break through, and he screamed, "Dad!" And I pushed my ice box towards him and my sled. I said, "Get this off the ice," because my main concern was,
what is with your phone today? You're quacking. You got crickets. Like, what is this? What is going on?
Let me go silence it. Yeah. I didn't silence it.
Jeez, Roy.
It's walking all over me, isn't it? Okay.
With all that is going on above the water, how does weather affect the fish under the ice?
I believe, it's my belief, and I have no scientific documentation to back this up, but when you have a windy day like that, I mean, if you got 8 inches of ice, if you got a foot of ice, if you got 3 inches of ice, the wind's not having any effect on that water because it can't get to it. What does affect it weather-wise outside, there's two things that I believe affect it. One is barometric pressure. Because, I mean, there's no secret. I mean, a falling barometer, good for fishing. Rising barometer, opposite effect, not the greatest for fishing. But barometric pressure, I believe, still affects the fish in negative and positive ways, regardless of whether there's ice cover or not. I firmly believe that, and I've seen that. The other thing that affects it weather-wise is the cloud cover, sun conditions, whether you have a gloomy overcast day or a bright sunny day. With the ice cover, the amount of daylight that gets through is not necessarily greatly diminished. It's filtered, but it still gets through. And again, the amount of snowpack you have on top of the ice can limit the amount of sunlight that gets through. But if you've ever been inside an ice shanty on a sunny day, the thing about it is you realize how much of that sunlight still gets through the ice and snow so the fish can see in that underwater world. When you put a shanty on the ice and you black out the windows so it's dark inside there, because the sun is still shining outside, even though it's dark inside your shanty, the sun is illuminating the ice and snow completely around that shanty. And when you drill a hole in the ice, you can see everything going on down that hole just by looking down into it, because everything else is illuminated except where you're sitting. Hard to explain, but again, it's looking, because the sun is illuminating everything below the ice through the ice, and you're inside a shanty that's preventing that sunlight from getting through where you're sitting, the area around you is still transferring light underneath that shanty. So it's my illustration of looking into a well-lit area from a dark area all over again.
You love that.
If you've ever been in an ice shanty and looked down the hole, it's amazing what you can see. The fish, you can see stuff, you can sight fish them. It's crazy. So weather still affects them when we have ice cover, but I believe the predominant factors that affect that are the sky conditions, the amount of cloud cover or lack thereof, and the barometric pressure.
So for a guy like me, I have two questions for you.
All right.
One is...
And then I'm going to get into some tips. I'm warning you.
All right. Well, you already have tips lined up. Well, I did have one more question for you.
Two. Hit them.
All right. What is the biggest misconception about ice fishing that, like, triggers you that you want to, like, you know, straighten everyone out on?
The biggest misconception
about ice fishing?
Well, I would say probably, isn't it too cold for fish to bite? Isn't it too cold for fishing? Let me straighten out people on that right here and now. Cold is a prerequisite for ice fishing. If it's not cold enough, there's no ice. Yeah, it has to be cold.
I should use that as our opening line.
that would be good.
Cold is a prerequisite.
Yeah, for ice fishing.
It's gotta be. You can't have ice when it's hot out.
Thank you, Mr. Obvious. But that's the misconception. Isn't it too cold to fish? No, I get that a lot. But people have to remember, fish are cold-blooded. They're not warm-blooded like us. Yeah, the temperature dropped below the ice. The temperature's like 34 to 36 degrees. That's the warmest it is. Unless you've got springs in a lake or you've got a power plant with a warm water discharge, and their body temperature is like that. But that's normal for them. They still have to eat, just not as often. Right. If the water temperature is, say, 35 degrees, their metabolism, their body temperature is 35 degrees. And I've read in all the scientific journals, when the water temperature is that cold, fish need to eat one meal approximately. They need to feed like once every 7 or 8 days. That's it, because they're metabolizing what they eat so slowly. But that's normal for them. Yeah, it's amazing we catch as many fish as we do when we ice fish, because they're feeding so infrequently. But if you get on lakes with good populations of fish, you're going to catch them. We generally always do. So I would say that's the biggest misconception.
Harry, are you hungry? No, it's going to be 6 more days before I eat.
That's it. Stop shivering.
That was my fish impression.
There you go. Yeah. You said you had another question.
No, that's good enough. I want to hear your tips and tricks now. Forget my questions. My questions, I just threw in the garbage. I just crumpled them up and threw them away.
To segue off of your, you know, too cold to fish. Tip number one, dress for the weather. Nowadays, there is no excuse not to. Back in the early days, before all the high-tech clothing and the high-tech materials we have nowadays that keep us, we can be completely covered when it's 90 degrees outside and be comfortable. And conversely, we can wear some fairly lightweight gear and be toasty warm when it's frigid cold outside and we're ice fishing. And my recommendation for everybody is to dress for it. Wear a good high-tech, you know, technical base layer. Get some good boots. That is number one. Cold feet will ruin your day faster than anything. And I have a buddy that the boots I wear, believe it or not, I got from Sportsman's Guide. They have some great deals, but the reason I got them from Sportsman's Guide is because the amount of thinsulate that is in these boots. I have never seen anywhere boots that have this amount. They have one boot in their guide gear selection. It's listed as monolithic, but they have 2,400 grams of thinsulate in those boots, each one. 2,400 grams. Most places, I mean, you buy rubber boots, they've got 400, 600, 800 is a lot. When most people buy winter boots, they're listed at 1,000 grams or 1,200 grams. Like, that's a lot. These boots have 2,400 grams. They are the warmest boots I've ever worn. They are the same boots I use when I saw the, and they're like $99. You can't go, you can spend twice as much as that on a pair of boots that have half that amount of thinsulate. These are well made, they're rugged, they're waterproof, they're amazing. I buy them one size above what I need, and I wear a pair of wool socks and a high-tech pair of socks. That's it. No foot warmers, and my feet are, they're hot. They're hot. They're toasty all day. They're the same boots I wear when I deer hunt in a tree stand, and I'm sitting 10 hours, 5 degrees, 15 feet in the air, and my feet are toast all day long. That's what keeps me out there. I suggested these to a buddy of mine, who was like, my feet are cold. My feet are cold. I need new boots. He bought a brand new high-tech pair of boots, and his feet were still cold.
Like the brand high-tech?
No, there's just high-tech is just a term I'm using.
High-technology boots?
Yeah. No, they had 1,200 grams of thinsulate and were guaranteed to keep your form warmer than any other boots, and they didn't.
Nothing.
His feet were still cold. He was still using the disposable foot warmers in his boots so he could stay out to fish. He's like, what boots do you use? I said, these are what I use. Go online. They're $99. He goes, boy, that's less than I paid for these. I said, I know, 2,400 grams. He wore them the day we were on Otsego Lake. And I kept asking him all day, how's your feet? He said, they're toasty. You weren't kidding. These are amazing. The ones I'm wearing, I've had for 10 years. And they're still like new because I only use them to ice fish. And the ones I use when I deer hunt, I got in their camo pattern. I in case somebody looks up 15 feet, my feet are camouflaged. They won't see me. It's a hunting thing. That's number one. Get yourself a good pair of boots because cold feet will ruin your day quicker than anything. And I would recommend one of the suits, all the manufacturers that make ice fishing gear now have suits that have flotation built into them. If you go through the ice, you're going to stay up. It's going to, if you ever do, break through. And again, JD, I was ice fishing for 30 plus years before that one day I broke through and was, you know, it was knee deep. My son freaked out. I said, my feet are on the bottom. Take my sled, get it off the ice. I didn't want to lose my gear. I was more concerned about my gear because I already knew I was fine. I was just aggravated. And now water's rushing in and my feet were getting wet. And I was going to have to go change so I could ice fish that day. Aggravated the crap out of me. But the suits that are made now by companies like Cabela's, Bass Pro, Eskimo, Striker Ice, Clam has their ice armor suit. All these can be purchased with the flotation built into them. So if you do go through the ice, you're going to stay up and you're going to be able to get yourself out, and it's going to save your life. So invest in one of those suits. That most of them run about $200 for the jacket, $200 for the bib, but they have them on preseason sales. They have them on after the season sales. It's just a good, if you're going to dress warm, you might as well buy a suit that's going to help you float should you go through. I know I have good friends that will wear nothing else when they're on the ice. For that reason.
Yeah, because they don't want to fall through the ice. This is exactly right. What I'm talking about.
And if they do, they want to be okay.
You got any extra ones of those laying around?
I do not have any extra ones. Well, we'll blow up some balloons and tie them around your neck and arms and legs. And
put the swimmies on.
Yeah.
Well, bright orange. Well, you can see where I am.
Yeah. I have a buddy I used to ice fish with decades ago who would always wear a PFD, you know, a life jacket when he was on the ice. And I thought, you know, that's pretty smart. And with the inflatable PFDs we have nowadays, they work when water shoots up into that activator, they instantly inflate. That's still going to happen if you go through the ice. So in lieu of spending $400 on a flotation suit, pick up one of the PFDs on sale at Bass Pro for $50-$60 and you're all set. That'll work too. That's a good tip. That's a money saving tip. Me, I'm going to go with a flotation suit because that's what the cool guys do.
Roy's making it rain with tips today. What's the next tip, Roy?
Get yourself a good sharp auger. I talked about this when we talked about the ice fishing segments before. I used to haul out a gas auger that had a lot of weight,
yep,
and a lot of power. But I tell you what, the cordless drills and the augers and the battery powered augers that we use nowadays are a lot quieter, a whole lot lighter. My auger weighs less than my cordless drill, for crying out loud.
That's great.
It's amazing. It's feather light. I've been running it 4 seasons. It still cuts through ice like, you know,
hot knife like butter. Like butter.
A hot knife through butter.
I knew it.
Forget about it. Get out of here.
Forget about it. So you got a Jiffy auger? Forget about it. You want to use my DeWalt?
Yeah.
Use an impact drill for that, or do you use the other one, a regular drill?
Well, we use the cordless drills.
Right. What kind? You hook you hook one from like your house onto it, right?
Yeah, my buddy's got I use the Eskimo pistol bit. My buddy, not wanting to spend money, took his existing Swedish auger and took the upper handle off it. You can buy an extension, a conversion bit, not an extension. It's a conversion bit where you would normally thread in your handle. You thread in this conversion bit and it gives you for a chuck for a half inch bit for a drill. And yeah, it's a 7-inch Swedish auger. And with this conversion bit, he can cut holes with his DeWalt cordless drill. And he does. It's not as efficient as one of these augers that are made for a cordless drill, but it still gets the job done. And instead of buying, you know, a specially made cordless auger for $150-$180, he spent $10 on the conversion bit and uses that, but takes a little bit longer to cut a hole, but it gets the job done and he's not drilling by hand. And like I said, I've been running mine 4 years. We funny story I'll share. Now when when we hear somebody fire up a gas auger, and that's rare these days. Almost everybody's using the new augers that are battery operated. When we hear somebody fire up a gas auger, sounds like they're running a chainsaw, which used to be us. When we hear that now, we look at each other and go, old school. Yeah. And we're both in our mid-60s, right? So the first time I ever tried out this Eskimo pistol bit, I have both the 6-inch and 8-inch versions. We're going to use the 8-inch when we fish for the pike on the 9th. But the first time I ever went on the ice with this pistol bit, my buddy was used to, we use my truck. I've got a bigger truck, full-size Chevy Silverado with a full-size box in the back. So it fits both of our ice sleds, my gas auger, and all the extra gear we haul when we go ice fishing. So we just both hop in my truck. And I took it was the first time I was going to try out this pistol bit. So I put the pistol bit, which is the auger, and the drill inside my ice box, which I build a top for with lids so he wouldn't see it. And we had pails, 5-gallon pails. We had bait buckets. We had our ice sleds. He put his ice sled in the truck, and he saw that my gas auger wasn't there, but it didn't register. And he told me later, when I put my sled in your truck, I didn't see your gas auger. He said, but it didn't really register. I didn't think anything of it. So when we got to the lake, I made a big deal about, we pulled our ice boxes out and I started doing, you know, a fake little meltdown. I'm like, you gotta be kidding me. Oh, I don't believe it. You gotta be kidding me. He's like, what? I said, I don't have my ice auger. I forgot my gas auger. He's like, yeah, I saw that it wasn't in there, but I didn't think. I said, how are we going to cut holes? And he said, well, I always bring my hand auger because that's what he had at the time. He said, we can cut them with that. I said, oh, man, that's going to take all day. He said, well, you know, at least we can do that. I said, yeah, I guess so. I know what happened. I said, I propped it against the wall of the garage last night to put fresh gas in it so we'd have plenty of gas today. And I said, it spilled a little over the tank. I didn't want to get it seeping into the bed of my bed liner in my pickup. So I just left it propped up. I wiped it down. I said, it'll evaporate off overnight. I've just got to remember to put that in my truck in the morning. And I said, I forgot. I know right where it is. My gas auger is standing up inside my garage an hour away from here. He's like, it's okay. It's okay. We'll use my hand auger. So we hike out onto the ice and I let him cut 3 holes through 14 inches of ice. And he's like, I need a break. Why don't you cut some of yours? I said, okay. And I opened my box. I said, maybe I'll try this thing. And I pulled out that auger and he gave me such a look. I said, hey, I've never used it before. I don't know if it's going to work. And of course it cut great. We had holes the rest of the day, but he's never, ever let me live that down, that I actually let him cut 3 holes by hand when I had that brand new auger in my box the whole time. He's a big one for pranking on me. So when
I was going to say, that was pretty aggressive on your behalf until you cleared that up at the end.
I owed him for like the last 3 times he pranked me. He's always doing that. So I made sure I got my money's worth out of it. And he's never, ever let me forget about it. He brings it up all the time.
So let's say you've got like $1,000 to spend on outfitting yourself.
Oh, cool. I like this.
How would you divide that money in regards to transport, hole cutting, gear, to wear, and then your fishing gear itself? Like, how would you distribute that?
Great question. Let's assume you already have a cordless DeWalt or Milwaukee or Craftsman drill that's brushless and has a 1/2-inch chuck, because that's what all these augers are set up for. You're going to drop $150 on an auger for that cordless drill. If you're smart, I would say if you got a grand to spend, I would drop $400 on one of those suits. So now you're into it. You got $450, but you're not going to be cold and you got your holes. You can pick up a set of 5 tip ups. You can buy ones that are made out of nylon plastic. Generally, let's see, the average one out there, let's say $15 a piece. So there's what, $75. Now you're $625. Keep a running tally for me. That's $625, but you got your tip ups. You're going to want a couple jigging rods for different techniques. You can usually find those at a Walmart. You can find them at Bass Pro. Let's say you pick up a couple of those. You're not sure you're going to like it. You buy a couple cheap ones. You get two of them for $50, $6.75. If you're using tip ups, you're going to be using bait, so you need a bait pail. So now you're at $700. You got $300 left. Well, you want a pair of those monolithic boots. $800. Now you got $200. But you're going to be warm. You want a jet sled. Say $50-$60 for a jet sled that puts all your gear in and walks you out on the ice, easy peasy. Spend some money on some tungsten jigs because they're a lot more efficient to fish with. Drop $40, you can get 10 tungsten jigs that'll outfit you for getting down there. You got $100 left. I'd buy some spoons like Swedish pimples, jigging Rapalas, stuff like that. You're going to need a hole skimmer. These are, you know, nickel and dime items that you can.
But they do add up, though, those nickel and dime items.
Yeah, nickel and dime up to $100 with jigging Rapalas, jigging spoons, Swedish pimples, crocodile spoons, Acme spoons, stuff like that. And you'll be fully outfitted to go out and ice fish. You can cut your hole. You can skim the ice out. You can set tip ups, or you can jig and you can catch fish. The one item that isn't essential but will take a lot of the guesswork out of it when you're jigging is a flasher unit for on the ice. And they're going to run about $300.
So you would rather that versus a scope of some kind?
I've got live scope on my bass boat. I've not ice fished with live scope, but we will be doing that on the night.
Oh, that's right, because your son got one at the sale and got it for like way cheap, right? It's like portable.
Way cheap, $3,000.
Yeah,
well, but he saved $2,000 because Bass Pro was running all these specials and sales around Christmas time, and he took full advantage of that. Well, and he is completely fully decked out with all the options that you can get, and he saved $2,000. But he can also use that on open water. The one that's wired direct on my bass boat, I can't pull off and run out onto the ice with. And I've been using a flasher for a long time. I know how to read it, and it shows me all this stuff. It will not show me that fish are at a distance and which way I need to fish. But I'll tell you what, when we go out and jig for panfish, most times you can drop that down and see fish right off the bat and know you're in a good spot. And with a flasher, you can drill a hole, you can drop down. If you get no activity within a few minutes, if you've got a good auger, I'll generally make a line of about 15 holes and just start jigging them and reading them with that flasher till I find fish.
Now you end up hopping, you said close to 300 holes in a session if you're really on it, right?
That was years and years and years ago when it was myself and my cousin who both had a gas auger, and we just Swiss cheese the whole place.
Does that weaken the ice when you're doing it like that?
No.
That's good.
No. Matter of fact, it reminded me of the old days. I don't do that anymore. I fish much more efficiently now. And I like the other day, I went to a lake Monday. I went to this lake and I drilled one hole. All I did was go out there to jig. I was in 16 foot. It was an area where we had found fish before in 18 foot. I was in 16 foot. I jigged 5 minutes, no activity whatsoever. So I backed up about 50 feet, drilled the second hole before I even started fishing. As soon as I put my flasher in, I saw a fish suspended at 14 foot.
Mm-hmm.
And once I started jigging, they came in at 12. And I could pull fish off the bottom in 16 foot. But they were a lot more reluctant to bite. Anytime I saw a fish move in at 12 foot, yeah, I would reel up to them and they would slam it. They were super active at 12 foot. So, but I'm real curious to see how the live scope application works in ice fishing. He's been loving it, but I don't see myself dropping $3,000 to use live scope on the ice. But I don't know. Maybe after the ninth, I'll go, what the heck? You live once, right? Maybe I will. So that was a great question. That's how I would outfit myself. Let's say you've got a Garmin portable fish finder like I do. It's the Garmin, I believe it's the Garmin Striker, and it has a flasher feature. You can use that unit on the ice. You can use it if you have a portable LCR, a portable liquid crystal recorder fish finder. You can use that on the ice, whether it has a flasher feature or not. Matter of fact, I know two guys who have that unit, and they don't use the flasher feature. They prefer the regular down imaging for ice fishing. And you can do that. I've used it in that mode. I just prefer the flasher. But the flasher is immediate. The down imaging shows you what was there, but it shows you more than the flasher does. And the live scope shows you a whole lot more. So if you're going to drop a grand, I would say get all the stuff I recommended, and because that's all essential stuff. The electronics are not essential.
You didn't say that I was waiting for you to say? And this is what's just that? Where our minds go. 5-person clam shelter and a heater.
If I was one of those guys, I would. If you got $2,000 to spend, go for it.
I haven't even done it yet, and I feel like I'm one of those guys.
Yeah.
I want to set up in there with some snacks. I want to bring my grill out there. You know, I want to sit in the sun with some sunglasses on and some SPF, like, 90 on my face.
Well, here's my final tip, because if guys haven't been ice fishing before and they're looking to do it, yes, that'll keep you comfortable. When we were out the other day and it was windy, my buddy brought his shanty and we set it up and it kept us comfortable. But when you have a portable shanty like that, and I have a brand new one in my basement I've set up once. Like I said, I'm usually pretty mobile on the ice. I mean, the other day was the exception when I only had to drill two holes. My second hole, it lit up with fish, and I sat there and I caught every fish out of it. I fished a couple hours and I caught a bunch of fish out of that hole. I didn't need to move. When you have that scenario, that's the time to have that shanty, set it up over that hole, and you're right where you need to be. Problem is, if you go out and set up that shanty and you don't find fish, and you got to go look for them, now you got to tear it down and then reset it up, and it's not that complicated, but it's taking time away from fishing. A more mobile application would be one of the 1 or 2 man flip shelters. It's got a sled built into it, and it's a flip over.
Yeah.
They have, and then you can be mobile. You can drill a hole, flip over,
and then
sit there and fish. If there's no fish there, you know, go drill another hole. If you find fish, good. Slide your sled over there, flip it over, you're fishing and you're inside. That's the way to go for a guy that's super mobile like me. And that's going to be my next purchase. You know, I've always been comfortable standing out in the open because that's the way I was brought up ice fishing. And with the technical clothing and the heavy duty gear we have nowadays, the ice fishing suit I'm using currently does not have flotation built into it, but it's the warmest outfit I've ever had. And I call it the furnace because a lot of days I'm taking the jacket off because it's just too hot. So, and that's standing there, you know, jigging, you're not moving a lot. You're not moving around a lot if you're on fish. So if you're looking to ice fish for the very first time, if you're a newbie at this and this has got you fired up to really go out there and try it, go out with someone who's a seasoned ice angler. You'll be a lot more comfortable. It will tremendously shorten your learning curve. You will learn a lot more, and you will absolutely help you tap into your angler within. I just want to put one thing out there to our listeners, and that is a plug for this year's 2025 Bass Pro Shop Spring Fishing Classic. The dates are March 6th through the 26th. I'll be in stores in Auburn, New York, Utica, New York, Bridgeport, Connecticut, across those weekends, and doing some work for Berkeley in the stores and doing seminars on electronics in February in the Utica store. So if you got Bass Pro Shops or Cabela's gift cards for Christmas, save them for that Spring Fishing Classic because you will save money. It's their biggest fishing sale of the entire year.